A new book by British writer Kazuo Ishiguro is a big event for his fans. It's been a decade since the last one, and so a lot of us have been really excited to get hold of the new one, called The Buried Giant. There's just one thing. It's high fantasy. There are knights in chainmail, ogres and pixies, and even a she-dragon. This is not what fans expect from Ishiguro. But he told Steve Paulson that he used the ogres and pixies to deal with the same themes he always has. Memory and violence. Here's an excerpt from The Buried Giant.
Ogres were not so bad, provided one did not provoke them. One had to accept that every so often, perhaps following some obscure dispute in their ranks, a creature would come blundering into a village in a terrible rage, and despite shouts and brandishings of weapons, rampage about injuring anyone slow to move out of its path, or that every so often an ogre might carry off a child into the mist. In one such area, on the edge of a vast bog, in the shadow of some jagged hills, lived an elderly couple, Axel and Beatrice. Perhaps these were not their exact or full names, but for ease this is how we will refer to them. For warmth and protection, the villagers lived in shelters, many of them dug deep into the hillside. This elderly couple lived on the outer fringes of the warren, and hardly benefited from the fire in the great chamber where everyone congregated at night. Perhaps there had been a time when they had lived closer to the fire, a time when they had lived with their children. In fact, it was just such an idea that would drift into Axel's mind as he lay in his bed during the empty hours before dawn, his wife soundly asleep beside him, and then a sense of some unnamed loss would gnaw at his heart, preventing him from returning to sleep.
Ah, that is wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, Ish, can you tell me about this world you've created? It's some mix of myth and history set before England had really forged its identity as a nation. Why did you decide to create this setting for your story?
Well, yes. I mean, just to explain where historically it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be after the Romans have left Britain. That's around 410 AD. But before the Anglo-Saxons, the people who eventually become the English, have settled the country. The Anglo-Saxons are landing in ever greater numbers around the country, but they haven't yet settled it. That's to say, they haven't conquered it. Now, historians have they have many arguments about this. No one knows what happened in that blank period of British history, but one theory is that there was a wipeout of the indigenous people and the Anglo-Saxons took over. There was kind of what we would today call an ethnic cleansing. And in a very short period of time, the indigenous Britons disappeared. They were either massacred or they fled. Okay, so I've set my story down historically in that time, but...
part of the appeal, that there wasn't that much known historically about it, so you kind of had a blank canvas?
It's not so much that, but what I was looking for, what I really needed from my setting was a place where different ethnic tribes had, for a generation, coexisted in peace. An uneasy peace, probably a peace imposed by some kind of force and dictatorship. And then suddenly something erupts and one side wipes out the other. Okay, so that's the scenario I wanted. And the crucial thing that interested me was the idea that some piece of societal memory had been reawakened to mobilize the hatred and the violence. And I suppose, I mean, you're asking me, you know, what drew me to such a setting. Okay, this is on the surface a kind of an ancient, semi-mythological kind of setting.
Right.
But what triggered it for me were a number of things that happened in the 90s, particularly on our doorstep, you know, where I live in Britain. Yugoslavia disintegrated in the early 1990s. And it was amazing to see in a place where we were used to going on vacation and things like this, concentration camps and a massacre, like the one that occurred at Srebrenica.
And this was also the era when the massacres happened in Rwanda, too.
Exactly, yeah. In both of those cases, we have people who are using each other as babysitters, you know, living in the same neighborhood, same villages. You know, one group suddenly remembering, in quotes, I guess, reasons to hate the other group. In the case of Bosnia, powerful people had very deliberately reawakened memories from the Second World War. But on the other hand, there was one positive example of a country around that time who got that balance between how much, you know, should a nation remember, how much should a nation forget? It got it just about right, I feel, and that was South Africa as it came out of the apartheid regime. For a time, it seemed inevitable that that country would descend into civil war, but it didn't. I mean, partly because of remarkable leadership, but there was a very deliberate process. The Truth and Reconciliation Committee was a very deliberate means by which that nation went about balancing that question, a very difficult question: how much should you remember of the terrible things that had occurred?
Which is so interesting the way you phrase that, because it's not as if a country necessarily wants to remember everything. I mean, all the injustices, all the atrocities, you have to remember some of that, I mean, to acknowledge the truth of what happened. But maybe you also have to be willing to kind of gloss over some of those awful things that have happened.
Exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. And that's very much what my book is about. I would say that there are often moments in any community's life when it's better to just forget things, to avoid just falling apart, you know, avoid cycles of violence, as we had, you know, near us in Britain, in Northern Ireland. I mean, people are deliberately keeping alive memories from even centuries back to fuel the hatred. But the analogy would be, and that's the case in my novel, The Buried Giant, with relationships. Mm-hmm. In something like a long marriage, which is at the center of my book, and my book is in many ways a kind of a love story about a long marriage. In a long marriage, you have exactly the same kinds of questions. There are inevitably dark passages that you know, the two people in the marriage wish to just move on from.
Right. Do you really want to remember that really bad thing that happened 20 years ago?
Exactly, yeah. It may not be as simple as infidelity. It might be some bad thing that just happened. It wasn't anybody's fault. But sometimes you just have to move on. But, you know, this is the question that my couple, in my Axel and Beatrice, in my novel, face. On the one hand, would our love survive some of those buried memories coming alive again? But on the other hand, if we don't look at those buried things, is our love a phony one? Is it based on something false? Is it really a true love if it's actually based on just forgetting some things?
This question of memory keeps coming up in your novels. I mean, one thing that's often said about your books is, I mean, you never write the same novel twice. I mean, the style always changes. In this, you're clearly incorporating certain elements of fantasy, but you do have certain recurrent themes, and one is this question of what to do with memory, and especially cultural memories about things that are kind of awful that happened.
I suppose so, yeah. But maybe because of that, I like to change everything else. You know, I like to change even the genre.
Speaking of genre, I have to ask about this. I mean, you have ogres and you have a dragon in the story. You have certain magical elements. You've tapped into one of our oldest myths, King Arthur. One of your characters is Sir Gawain from King Arthur's Round Table. Is this a fantasy novel?
You could call it that, I suppose. I'm never very concerned about what actual official label you put on things. If you're saying that things like Beowulf or, you know, the Odyssey, if you're saying they're fantasy, then definitely this book is fantasy. But
well, Ursula Le Guin, of course, famous fantasy writer, blogged after she first heard you talking about it, and she seemed to think that you didn't want to be labeled a fantasy writer, and which she said was insulting and a thoughtless prejudice. And I think she may have backtracked after she made those comments.
Yeah, I don't want to restart the thing with Ursula K. Le Guin, who I respect a lot, and you know, she was gracious enough to, without any prompting from me, to withdraw her, you know, actual personal accusation against me. But her larger point, I suppose, is that there's been a kind of snobbery on the part of the mainstream literary community towards the fantasy genre. And to some extent, I'm experiencing some of that for the first time since I published this book, because I have had people saying to me, you know, I love The Remains of the Day, I love Never Let Me Go, but I hear your new book has ogres and pixies in it. I'm not sure if I want to read your new book. And this slightly shocked me, because, you know, when I was writing the book, I needed my pixies and my ogres for very, you know, strong artistic reasons.
Now, explain that. Why did you need these elements of what we might call the fantastic or the mythic to make this work? I mean, why couldn't you deal with these questions of mass killings and group hatred in a more realistic fashion?
Well, I had a story. As a novelist, I work around the story, and my story required a nation, a community that was suffering from some sort of strange amnesia. What appealed to me was to have some kind of old-fashioned, very old-fashioned, traditional fantasy reason. You know, there was a mist that had come over the land, and people were losing their memories. And so how I work is that, you know, I take anything available that will make my story work. But if lines are being drawn about, whether pixies and ogres are good things for literature, I'm on the side of the pixies and ogres. They're there for very big reasons in my book.
Kazuo Ishiguro, talking with Steve Paulson about his new novel, The Buried Giant.